This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Time now for the one and only rascal, Max Armstrong, on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I yield to you. I think you're a more senior rascal than I.
That's all right. You know, the oldies can learn from the young ones.
Yes, yes, yes. New Year. Have you resolved to do anything yet?
I've resolved to make it through another day. That's I'm done making resolutions. There are things I want to do, and I will, in my time, do them. And I'm not going to let the start of a new year kind of pigeonhole me into a stressful situation. So it'll happen.
Well, this has been a good year.
Yeah.
I hope it's been a good one for you. It's been a good one for me. A lot of neat things happened this year.
Wonderful. Right.
I intend to top that, by golly, in the new year somehow.
Well, I'm sure it will as we get older and the days go by, new and exciting things happen for everyone. That's going to be great, and you're just enjoying yourself. I know that.
Following you can tell, can't you?
Oh, I can. I can. Seeing you with the little one, boy, just like Hannah said, you are one happy camper.
It was a traveling year. I got the flash the other day from Southwest Airlines that I was with them for 63,000 miles this year.
Wow.
and you know what? It didn't seem like it. The year has just gone so quickly, and I've enjoyed it immensely, as you observe.
Yeah.
We'll catch up with you in a few minutes, sir, for
you
headlines around 5:30 then, huh?
You got it.
Roger Battish in the WGN newsroom. Max Armstrong with you here on the Saturday morning show. We're bringing in the new year in kind of a moderate way from a temperature standpoint. I mean, high around 40 degrees. We're going to be above freezing tomorrow and Monday. Then along about the middle part of next week. It's not going to be brutal like it was early this month, but we'll have high temperatures, well, pretty much in the teens, I think, along about Wednesday and Thursday. The Northern Illinois Farm Show is coming up week after next. That'll be on the horizon. Quite often for that show, they have snow piling around out there at the Northern Illinois Convocation Center, Northern Illinois University. And who knows, maybe by the time that show starts on the 11th, it'll be another one of those where there's plenty of snow piled around out there. Well, Orion Samuelson comes along to talk about the markets. He visited this week with Paul Giorgi. They visited just yesterday about the kind of action we've seen in the markets. We'll share that visit coming up next here on the Saturday Morning Show.
On this last weekend of 2016, we talk markets with Paul Giorgi. He is the president of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, and we talk to Paul frequently throughout the year because of his knowledge of markets in the U.S. and worldwide. First of all, Paul, a happy new year to you, and I hope it's a little better year ahead for producers.
Well, I hope so, too. I think it promises to be a pretty exciting year ahead. We've got some hurdles to get over with supply and the demand situation in grains, but I think in all there it's going to pan out to be a pretty good year for the people that are astute marketers.
I have said this a couple of times coming to the end of the year that the most unusual thing I saw in the markets this year was a soybean weather rally in June. I had never seen that in all my years of covering the market. Were there any remembering moments for you?
Well, I think that certainly was a surprise. And when we look back on that rally in soybeans that we had in June, it was a lot of money flow and funds buying and money coming into the grain markets. The other big thing that is a shocker to the markets that we've seen sharp moves in many markets was the presidential election that we've seen in November. And I think that probably was going to have a pretty good impact on us as we move forward here in 2017.
We don't have a new Secretary of Agriculture at this point. Are you looking for any major ag or trade surprises in the Trump administration?
Well, I don't think at this time to say you're not looking for any surprises, I think would be wrong, because I'm sure there's going to be some surprises. We've seen the surprises through the campaign and already putting his cabinet together. So there will be some surprises there. But I think agriculture may not be the focus. And I think with all surprises come excitement in the markets and causes prices to move up or down. We as producers and marketers are going to have to take advantage of those rally times that we see in the marketplace here in the next few months.
We have had several rallies, particularly in corn and soybeans. As a matter of fact, the one past the halfway mark of the year was a pretty good rally for both corn and beans, wasn't it?
It was a big rally. We were trading in a very small trading range up until that time, to that mid-June time frame. And within a month, month and a half period of time, we extended the range in corn to $1.38 and beans of over $3.50 during that period of time, which did give us some opportunity to make some sales. And I think that was, you know, hopefully we have that kind of activity again this year. And I think that's what the producers are, that we talk to anyway, are certainly looking for. They're looking for that that one big surge in price that they can make some sales on.
But I have found over the years, when that does happen, they tend to not sell because it'll be 10 cents higher tomorrow, and then they'll lose all that money. Are they getting a little bit more disciplined in marketing?
Well, I think we're going to see more discipline now, and I think that's the, as I look forward into 2017, Ori, and I'm looking at two different markets. I think the first half of the year we're going to be in a demand-driven type market, where if we get rallies, the supply is going to be there. Now we've got to create that demand, and the market will sell off. We will get some demand, some export business, and usage. So it's going to be a back-and-forth type market as we work through the large supplies that we've got. We've got known supplies right now, which the market usually acts on unknown things that happen. So the supply is there. So the demand is going to be the feature the first part of our marketing year. And then, of course, it's going to be supply that's going to be affected by weather and number of acres planted, you know, what kind of yields we're going to have and things like that. So looking for a kind of a dull sideways market in the first part of this 2017 marketing year.
We can't talk markets without bringing up China. About a year ago, we were talking about sales to China were certainly going to back away, and it really didn't happen. What's your analysis of the current situation, not politically, but trade-wise with China?
Well, I think the hard part there is the political effect of trade with China. I'm in the belief that China has created a lot of demand and went out there and buying a lot of soybeans, especially from the U.S., to fill their immediate needs. And now they can go here after the first of the year. We're going to start harvesting already in Brazil by probably the middle of January. So that will open up a lot of a market down there. And they've, in our analysis that we've done here, suggest that they've bought enough from us to meet the portion or the split that normally would occur. So, you know, they could very easily back away from us. They've done this maybe for political reasons, that they want to get it bought ahead of the new presidential leadership. So, you know, there's some things that will have to be worked out where they can back away. I think another reason is their hog industry has been gaining a lot of attention, and they have increased hog production dramatically, especially during and far this time of year when their New Year's celebration starts on January 28th. They consume about 10% of their yearly consumption of pork during this 1 week period of time. So it is it's an impact from China. It's always going to be there, and we're going to have very closely, but you know, there could be some major changes come that hopefully it will be good for our agricultural exports rather than negative.
You don't often hear the term glut in Chinese agriculture, but I'm hearing all about the corn glut and that they've got to get rid of some of their supply.
Well, that is very true, and they've trying to figure out how to do that and continue production and when the government is holding all this grain, they've got to figure out how to release it and not ruin their whole agricultural economy, and it's become quite a challenge for them. And we understand there's a lot of that corn that's out of condition, and where are they going to go with that? And
right.
And we have a tendency of, you know, we think our corn here in size of bushels, I mean, they're carrying a tremendous amount of the ending stocks in the world. So we're not talking in the same quantity that we are here in the U.S., and it's a tremendous problem for them.
Let's turn attention to South America, because do you see anything there at the moment that could have an impact?
Well, I mean, we continue to worry about weather conditions and growing conditions there. Some of the highlights that trade is talking about right now is still Argentina has got some about 23 to 25% of the crop that needs to be planted yet. That could be a problem because it's too wet down there right now. There's other areas in Brazil. The northern Brazil area is a bit dry, certain areas. But from what we see down there, those weather conditions are a lot like we've seen here in the U.S. last year. The areas that are getting rain are having the potential for tremendous crops. And you've got a very small areas and pockets that are dry, and they are going to have crops that are under stress. So it looks to us that it's going to be a big crop, and from all indications, it could be bigger than what the USDA is forecasting on this their December report. And as we go forward in January here, we got to look at this January 12th report is going to be a big focus and a big happening here for agriculture prices for the year.
Quick question on fund buying. Have they been active in ag commodities this year?
Oh, yeah. They're always active in ag commodities, and they might have been less, a little more, or not quite as active as they normally have been, but I think if there's any, once we get some type of a reaction or a highlight that is impacting the market. I mean, just like we've seen in that June rally last year in soybeans, I mean, there's plenty of money on the sidelines that could come back into this thing. And there's some thought out there that if money with the stock market at 20,000 on the Dow index, that if money starts coming out of the stock market, where is it going to go? It very easily could go into the agricultural commodities, which normally would drive prices higher, and that would be good.
Every year in January, Allendale holds a special get-together to talk markets. Give me the details and how people can participate.
Well, we've got our annual Allendale Ag Outlook Conference going to be held on January 25th, or 24th, 25th, and 26th. It's all done via video, so you can log in, watch it from your own home, and at the time that you want. We're going to have Drew Lerner from World Weather Inc. will be our key weatherman there, and that is the only segment of our conference that will not be recorded. So you're going to have to attend that live, and that's on January 24th. All the details can be found at www.allendale-inc.com.
Allendale, Allendale, hyphen
inc.com. Yep.
And we'll have that on file if people need it. One final question. Any major advice at this point in time for farmers in 2017?
Well, the advice is I think you still have to sell rallies and be willing to move this grain. And I think that's the biggest problem. And I think, as I've said, I've said many times, there's opportunities out here that you can participate in the futures market with options, different option strategies. And we would be more than willing to share those ideas with anybody that wants to call and ask us. You can reach us at 800-262-7538, and we'd be more than happy to talk to them about it.
Thank you so much for this visit and for the many other visits throughout the year. We do appreciate it. Paul Giorgi, who is the president of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois.
28 minutes past 5 on the Saturday morning show from WGN Radio. Max Armstrong here with you, along with Orion Samuelson. He'll be back with Samuelson Says in a few minutes. He was talking markets. They'll have excellent market coverage and a lot of other great information for professional farmers at the Farm Futures Business Summit coming up early in the new year. I'll be on the program out there on that Friday. It's a two-day program, and it'll be held in Moline this year, actually Bettendorf, the Quad Cities Waterfront Convention Center at Bettendorf, Iowa, for the Farm Futures Summit, January 19th and 20th. And, they'll talk about where the grain markets are headed and global trends impacting the business of agriculture. Dave Cole will be on the program, longtime economist at Virginia Tech University. He's at the podium at farm meetings about as often as the glass of water these days. He's very lively. He's active. He's animated. And he is loaded with information when he comes into meetings. And he'll talk about interest rate changes, how they'll affect agriculture, and how they'll affect land values. And what about global demand? Will it continue to go on and ramp up? He brings what a lot of people call a good 30,000-foot perspective of agriculture. Dave Cole will be on the program. Again, that's the Farm Futures Summit, January 19th and 20th. You can get all of the information and sign up also, if you care to, at farmfuturessummit.com. Well, we'll visit with our old friend, Illinois Farm Bureau past president and a past director of agriculture for the state of Illinois, Phil Nelson, coming up in the second half of the morning show right here on WGN Radio 720. Thank you, Rascal. Happy New Year to you. Party hardy and safely.
Thank you, sir, and the same to you and your family.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Roger Battish there in the newsroom. Back here for the second half of the Saturday morning show. Max Armstrong with you. And, yes, we hear one more time from the Big O on Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products.
If there's one thing I know, it's that all toilet bowls enjoy being rust-free. Hi, this is Orion, and this holiday season, give your toilet bowl RustGuard, the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that protects against rust and hard water stains with every flush. Just one RustGuard tablet in the tank. It's really that easy. Log on to Wink, WHINK.com, to see all the fine clinging products from Wink. Pick up RustGuard this holiday season. Joy to the bowl. The rust is gone. It is a topic I have discussed several times on Samuelson Says. Farmer concerns over the merger and acquisitions of agribusiness companies and what it does to competition and their bottom line. We have talked about that, but recently I heard from a friend who is an executive with an agribusiness corporation who shared with me a story from John Onken's Agridairy Business Letter just recently, and I quote, Carlinville, Illinois-based Prairie Farms Dairy and Swiss Valley Farms headquartered in Davenport, Iowa, have announced plans to merge their operations with Prairie Farms Dairy. And the merger with Swiss Valley was driven by our commitment to build value for our cooperative members and is consistent with our growth strategy. That, according to Ed Mullins, Executive Vice President and CEO of Prairie Farms. The merger of the nation's number 18 and 24th ranked dairy cooperatives will create the nation's 12th largest dairy co-op when ranked by milk volume from farmer members. And both of the co-ops involved in the merger say it will help their members and it's a good move to become more efficient in providing the market and the service. So my friend, who's an executive with a corporation involved in agribusiness, said, what's the difference? Isn't what's good for the goose also good for the gander? Why should farmer cooperatives be enabled to come together in a merger or an acquisition? And agribusiness companies get heavily criticized for doing that? Well, it's certainly a point for discussion. But let's face it, since the beginning of agriculture in the United States, everything has gotten bigger. I still hear from people who say we should go back to farming the way we did when Grandpa was alive. That wouldn't work in today's age because change is constant. And it doesn't just involve agribusiness, but it involves agricultural cooperatives as well. I guess it's an ongoing discussion that'll probably never end, and I'll leave that to you. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, big O, thanks. Orion Samuelson there. 22 minutes before 6 here on the Saturday morning show with the other guy, Max Armstrong. Between these broadcasts, I tweet stuff from time to time. Do you follow Twitter at all? Oh, I tell folks, use it. It's an amazingly wonderful tool. You don't have to put out any information. You don't have to tweet. You don't have to do anything, but you can monitor. You set up certain people to follow. Let's say you want to follow a variety of news sources in agriculture. Maybe you'd want to follow some of the ag economists at the universities. You want to follow Reuters or Bloomberg News or Wall Street Journal's tweets. Maybe you want to watch politics. You follow The Hill or Politico or Washington Post. You can just see all of their stories that they tweet pop up on your screen. It's just a great tool. In essence, I use it as a news service. I see the stories that I want to see of various valuable news sources. But anyway, I tweet stuff there fairly often. If you care to, follow me there at Max Armstrong on Twitter. One of the things I tweeted this week, it came from John Schutzky, who's up at the University of Wisconsin, a highly regarded agriculture expert whose roots are in Porter County, Indiana, as I recall. But he's spent quite a few years up in Madison. And John tweeted a map the other day about agriculture exports and which states are really reliant upon the ag exports. And huge in terms of ag exports is the state of California and Washington State. As you can imagine, they ship right off that West Coast. But also, where ag exports are very important, Texas, Nebraska, Minnesota, Iowa, and, Illinois. Absolutely. And, of course, the access to the Mississippi River is a big part of that. So, you know, you can see stuff like that and other things that I tweet on Twitter, Max Armstrong. Joining us on the Saturday morning show, former Illinois Farm Bureau President, former Illinois Agriculture Director, full-time Illinois farmer Phil Nelson. It's been a while since we visited. It's great to have a chance to catch up with you again, sir. You're staying busy, we trust.
We are. Between taking care of the livestock in the wintertime, hauling some December contracts to both corn and soybeans, and having two teenagers in high school, it seems like we're burning the candle at both ends.
As far as the grain market is concerned, you talk about marketing grain. It hasn't been quite as bleak as some people feared, or at least thus far it hasn't, right?
Well, we've had a pretty good bounce in the bean market. I think a lot of producers around here are hoping we'll see some sort of a bounce in the corn market. But I think, most everybody was pretty satisfied with the yields they've gotten this last fall, and that's kind of made up for some of it. But the other thing that I think is top of mind is producers are gearing up for the 2017 crop is how much negotiating they can do on the input side of things, and that's everything from seed to fertilizer to chemicals and that sort of thing. So busy time of year for everybody.
The big number on that cost side, a very big number, is the farm cash rental rate. What are you hearing? Are farmers having any success at all in bringing that number down?
Well, you know, the talk is that they've had conversations, and depending on, you know, where a producer was at on the way up when we had some pretty healthy markets, there are a lot of landlords that didn't ratchet it up as high as some. So I think those people are a little reluctant to pull back at this point in time. So I haven't heard a lot of downturn. I think steady would be a better word to describe what I'm hearing in the cash rent market.
Just talking about national politics for a moment, there's a new occupant of the White House coming up here in about 3 weeks, and I know that across the heartland, I saw a survey just ahead of the election that showed farmers heavily favored Donald Trump, and I've heard a lot of after-the-election optimism. And here we are now coming into the new year, and there's still not been the naming of an agriculture secretary. Are you sensing any disappointment out there at this point, Phil?
Well, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people over the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I think there's some concern to see which direction the president-elect is going to go with that pick. And I think the ag community, as you stated, supported him quite strongly in this past election cycle. And I think the reason for that is farmers are concerned with the overreach and regulation that we have witnessed, whether it's the waters of the U.S. or some of the other regulations that are coming down the pike through the Environmental Protection Agency. I think they're concerned long-term of which direction are we going to go. And I think a lot of producers would like to see a farmer-type occupant in that secretary's seat that understands the breadth of the situation that we are facing in agriculture. Is we're being challenged on the commodity price side, but the regulation side, and, you know, trying to turn that around to make this industry more vibrant as we look to the future. And just as the president has said, he wants to make America great again. You know, we too in agriculture think that we're the bright spot that, you know, is pivotal to the economic growth of this country long term. So I think everybody's watching with keen interest to see what type of person he's going to place in that number one seat at USDA.
Most of the people who've run the U.S. Department of Agriculture in recent years have come out of the world of politics. They might have served as a governor somewhere, or they were in the House of Representatives, or they served in the Senate, and few have been an actual agriculture producer. You've got to go all the way back to Ronald Reagan's pick of John Block, the Illinois farmer who served at the time. Well, what do you say to the argument that, you know, they want somebody in there maybe who can work with Congress, who understands the mechanics of Washington, who knows how to work with the people of the House and Senate, and maybe they feel that's more important than having a hands-on farmer?
Well, I've heard that comment many times, Max, but I would put a lot of the people in the agriculture leadership community atop of being able to work with those people, because through farm organizational work or commodity group work, you work with those legislative leaders on both sides of the aisle. And I think the other thing that somebody with that background in agriculture brings to the table is you don't have to re-educate them on the impact that it has on agriculture, whether it's a grain farmer, a cotton producer, or being a livestock producer. We get it. And I think long-term, I mean, I'm a good friend of Jack Block's, so are you. I think between Jack Block and Earl Butz, they were two of the better secretaries we ever had, because I think they had a good pulse of what goes on in American agriculture on a daily basis.
You may have heard me say this, because I have a few times, and it wasn't totally tongue-in-cheek when I said it, that the person running the Environmental Protection Agency in recent years has exerted almost as much influence over the lives of farmers and ranchers across the United States as the Ag Secretary. Put that in perspective. He's chosen the gentleman from Oklahoma, the attorney general down there, who seems to be getting high marks as the EPA administrator. So what more do you guys out on the farm really need?
Well, I think you need beyond getting some of these regulations that have went, I think, way too far, put some common sense and some science back into them, I think you need a secretary that can stand up for the ag community in cabinet meetings so we don't get into a situation like we've had in past years where not necessarily did everybody understand the impact that agriculture has when you start putting sanctions on over various disputes. I think you also need a secretary that can work with Capitol Hill as we write a new farm bill, because 2018 is just around the corner, and I think you're going to look at a little bit different type of a farm bill than what we had this last time. The environment has changed, and I think you also need someone that's going to be a champion for agriculture and telling the story and reconnecting the consumers back with the producers like we have done here in this state and have tried to do at the national level through the American Farm Bureau.
Philip Nelson there, past Director of Agriculture for the state of Illinois, past President of the Illinois Farm Bureau, and yes, he continues to farm in LaSalle County, Illinois, with some fine analysis there of the national scene as we're watching it at the moment. 12 minutes before 6 on the Saturday morning show on WGN Radio. I mentioned the Northern Illinois Farm Show coming up week after next, January 11th and 12th at NIU. Then the Midwest Ag Expo. That's another big indoor farm show that takes place in our region in January. I'm going to try to get down there to Gordyville. That's that expo center there on U.S. 36, Northeast Champaign County. It's east of Rantoul. That show is January 25th and 26th. That's a good indoor farm show. And it's nowhere near, of course, the scale or scope of the Louisville Farm Show, which comes up in February. And we'll be down there, too. I'll be down there, I think, with Case IH. We'll have some hats to sign or something down at Louisville coming up in February. So it'll be a busy schedule. I mentioned the Farm Futures Summit. I'll be on the program there out at Bettendorf. I'll be there on the 20th, but again, that's a two-day show, the 19th and 20th. So, it'll be a full agenda. And then I take over tomorrow, as a matter of fact, officially start serving a year as president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Very much looking forward to representing the men and women who cover the agriculture story on radio and television and the Internet through the year 2017. The 175th anniversary of Prairie Farmer. And the editor of Prairie Farmer, Holly Spangler, joins us on the line this morning here on WGN Radio. Holly, 175 years. Has it been equaled by any other publication?
It has not. As far as we know, we are the oldest publication, continuously published magazine in the United States. So we're pretty proud of that.
What were some of the major landmarks along the way?
Well, you know, we did a lot of digging through our archives and looking and reading, and, you know, there were just a lot of neat things that we saw, stories that were covered and wars that were covered, and, you know, to think that the people out on the prairie, you know, back during the Civil War got their Civil War news from Prairie Farmer is kind of crazy to think about today, but that was some of the stuff that they covered, and a lot of the same topics that we talk about today, you know, elections and politicians and pattern tiling and equipment and animals and all those same things.
I was just going to ask you that. I would imagine there are some recurring themes as you look over all of those decades of agriculture. Now, let me also ask you, has Prairie Farmer always been pretty much just an Illinois magazine, or did it serve other states at one time?
It did serve other states at one time. You know, it was founded out of Chicago, went out to, you know, pioneers out on the prairie, out across Illinois and Indiana, served Wisconsin and Iowa and all those areas at one point, and then they sort of started spinning off state-specific publications, and then Prairie Farmer became unique just to Illinois.
You mentioned the Chicago connection. Prairie Farmer has had ties to the Chicago metropolitan area for many, many years. Did it all start in Chicago?
It did. It did. You know, back when Chicago was just a muddy river town on the way to Galena, you know, that was when John Stephen Wright founded Prairie Farmer back in those days. And our offices were in Chicago for a very long time, several different buildings. One of the neat stories we found was that the building was destroyed in the Chicago fire, and they were still able to get the magazine out on time. So we have joked among our staff, we never have an excuse to miss a deadline if they could do that.
Some of the stories that I recall reading have put the location, I believe, on West Washington Street, and the radio station was there at the time, back when Prairie Farmer owned a WLS radio, as I recall.
It was, yeah, and I believe they recorded everything out of that building, you know, and just did all kinds of, you know, all the work came out of that building then.
I've seen some photographs of Prairie Farmer's involvement in the old corn husking shows, and there were huge crowds. I mean, tens and tens of thousands of people came to watch these guys who were so good at what they did, hand husking the corn.
Absolutely. You know, and from what I understand, that was the predecessor to the Farm Progress Show. You know, when they founded the Farm Progress Show, I believe in 1953 was the first year for that. You know, that was the idea. Like, now we're moving on to the next generation. We're beyond hand husking, but let's go see all the equipment run in a field and let's see it demonstrated. And today it's still the largest outdoor farm show in the United States.
The combination of the magazine and the radio outreach, which extended over many, many states, allowed for the development of personalities. I remember being on the farm in southwestern Indiana and reading columns. I looked forward to the arrival of the Prairie Farmer magazine, and there were a number of individuals, both men and women, who became prominent through their articles, if I recall correctly.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and Captain Stubby came to be a columnist because of his work in radio, and then became, you know, very popular at the Farm Progress Show, you know, to people to come see him and read his columns all those years. More recently, Delight Weir wrote a column for 50 years, you know, just talking about life on their farm, and people followed along with some pretty significant tragedies in her family's life. And, you know, I think people just like that just kind of become beloved to readers because you kind of see how their life works and see how much of it's similar to yours, and people enjoy that. So, yeah, a lot of familiar names over the years.
I'm so glad you mentioned Captain Stubby, who still has family in the Chicago area. And I always enjoyed being around him and really enjoyed being in his audience and still enjoy listening to some of the recordings that he made back in the day. And I remember him telling me at one time he would never tell a joke that he would be reluctant to tell in church or in front of a family member. His humor was clean, and yet it was so funny. He was genuinely funny.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that was one of the things. They had to be careful about what they said on the air, and he just stuck with it and made it a nice thing for families.
Captain Stubbing and the Buccaneers, as I recall. And I think he did a little television work in Chicago, as a matter of fact, back in the day, I want to say in the late 50s and early 60s, too. He was highly recognizable, a very great guy. He was actually to be honored at that Farm Progress Show in the 50th anniversary show in 2003, and it got rained out, of course. That was the one at Henning, Illinois, not far from Danville, and he was there, and that was the last time I got to interview Captain Stubby. Just a tremendous personality, very likable man, and a quality entertainer. Back to the magazine for just a moment. Has it always been kind of a how-to farm publication, giving the producers a lot of guidance on steps they should take?
Yeah, you know, I think the original editors, their mantra was sort of telling farmers, write for your paper. You know, write in and tell us what you're doing, and let us interview you. And over time, that's evolved, you know, to where we still go out to everybody's farms and talk to them about what they're doing and how they do it and what population they're planting and what herbicides they're using and why and how, and bring in all these tremendous industry experts that we have here in Illinois and talk to them about, you know, best practices and proper nitrogen rates and all those kinds of things. So we do a whole lot of production how-tos, and we also get into a lot of issues in Illinois agriculture, you know, things that are facing small rural communities, things that are going on in our Department of Agriculture, tax laws that affect farmers, and all those kinds of things.
Holly Spangler, editor of Prairie Farmer, the magazine celebrating its 175th year of service. And, of course, they are on the Internet. Prairie Farmer is there. Holly Spangler participates in social media. She tweets. So you can find Holly there, and with a lot of great information. She does a great job of covering the Illinois agriculture scene. I've had a flashback in recent days as all of this has been going on with Russia. and the sanctions imposed, and then Putin saying, ah, it's all right, you know, we're not going to throw your diplomats out. But I had a flashback to January 4th of 1980, because that was when we imposed sanctions against the old Soviet Union, Jimmy Carter, and it was a Friday. You know, it's amazing how certain days in your life stick out and you never forget them. And I remember 2:30 in the afternoon, I walked into Studio A of WGN Radio. It was when the studios were out at Bradley Place with a television station. I walked in with the late Bob Collins at 2:30 to break the news that we would no longer be selling grain to the old Soviet Union, which had become a very important market for the United States. We had something like a 55% share of the grain market, of all of the grain going into that sprawling complex of the old Soviet Union that spread across a dozen time zones. And our 55% market share went to zero with one strike of the pen by Jimmy Carter. And it had devastating effects. We shot ourselves in the foot with that trade sanction. Hopefully, we've learned lessons and we will not repeat that. And while it's not the old Soviet Union and not even so much Russian in focus anymore, it's China, of course, now that is a big market with us. And we hope that the new administration doesn't diddle with trade, because farmers need trade so desperately. With 96% of the world's population living outside of the United States, we need to serve those markets. We'll have the news coming up here. A news update just ahead of Mike Stephen on WGN Radio.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.